Welcome to the Startup Addict Podcast. I'm Nick Swinburne. I've been starting companies for over 20 years now. I've had some big successes, like Zappos.com, and lots of failures. Regardless of the outcome, I'm still convinced there's nothing more addicting than trying to turn ideas into reality.
Welcome to episode
12.5
of the Startup Addict, and this episode, we'll be talking about the business of soccer.
And not even we will be talking about, we were talking about.
Yes, actually we were. It's going to be an older recording that we have no idea when we recorded it.
Yeah, now this one we recorded a few months ago. We just asked Julio for specifics and his response was no idea. So,
but we I didn't date it, so I don't know exactly when.
Interesting.
We were working on a fourth division team, the Burlingame Dragons, for three seasons. They played in the PDL. And we were working on a second division team that would play in the USL, San Francisco Football Club, SFFC. So it was an interesting process. We went through everything from trying to build a small stadium in Burlingame to working with the Giants to see if we could play at AT&T Park. And ultimately, we weren't able to continue with the project. And so we recorded a podcast a while back just explaining, you know, where we were with soccer and kind of what had happened along the way and why we were no longer going to pursue it. So we thought it was still an interesting story.
Plus with the World Cup.
With the World Cup coming up, exactly. We'd throw it out there and see if anyone found it interesting. All right. So was thinking of doing a long blog post about this, but we've been recording a podcast for Talk and Talker, and so afterwards figured it'd be easier to just get all this out on a podcast. So today is Monday, what, October 1st?
Second.
So, you know, it's a shitty day. Obviously, the Las Vegas shooting is all we're really thinking about. But you know, I think people have been interested in this project, so I thought it was important to get this update out, even though it's kind of the last thing I want to talk about today. So we had obviously gone public with the fact that we were applied for USL franchise for SFFC, San Francisco Football Club. I don't know when we went public, maybe a month or two ago, it feels like. You know, it's funny. The only reason we went public with it was because Jordan, you know, our idea was why go public with it? You know, until it's 100%, let's not talk about it. And then Jordan had done a podcast where he had, you know, kind of complimented, not complimented, but he had just, you know, been optimistic about some NASL opportunities. I think all he said really was, yeah, there's a lot of opportunities in NASL, which are interesting, or, hey, I think there's a lot of potential in all kinds of soccer and blah, blah, blah. And that had given him a little bit of heat. I think USL wasn't very happy with him that, you know, we'd applied as a expansion franchise and he had seemed to be complimentary of another league. So he felt that, I don't know if it was what they expected, but he felt like, you know, they thought that our bid was public. It wasn't public over here. I mean, there were people knew that someone from had applied as SF, but they didn't know who it was, and we kind of liked it that way. But anyways, he felt like, well, you know, I don't want to jeopardize this bid at all, so I'm gonna, you know, I want to have. So he did the interview where he came across as a dickhead, where I called it his scorched earth interview, which actually wasn't that bad. When you listen to it again, it wasn't that bad, but the first time it sounded bad, and that was kind of his overreaction, right? So he's like, all right, if you guys are upset that I was complimentary of NASL, well, then I'm just gonna blast everyone I can think of and see if, you know, hopefully this makes you happy. And so he did that, and that kind of forced us then to announce the team, because he basically announced the team when he did that, which then got us some attention. We did a interview, which got us in the newspaper and what have you. So we were forced to be out there. I, you know, got a Twitter account and started conversing with fans and dealing with it, which I enjoyed. I mean, I enjoy talking about it. It's just, I would have preferred always that it was never public until it was definite. But that being said, unfortunately, a couple days ago, we actually withdrew our bid for USL franchise. which was very disappointing. We were feeling pretty good about things, and but ultimately we couldn't get the stadium piece, and so we figured, well, you know, we're fairly limited with our options around here, so instead of dragging this on forever, we've all got other things we need to get working on, and so let's not drag this on any longer. You know, you get so focused on just wanting to complete the mission, and we didn't want to find ourselves in a situation where we were forcing something which didn't make any sense. You know, it's expensive. I mean, an expansion fee was $5 million. You know, like, you're not going to invest $5 million in something unless you really think that it's got a lot of potential. You know, and that doesn't even take into account the operating budget and the expected losses for the first couple of years. And so it was a big deal. It was a big project. And unless you really feel confident you've got the right place, you know, I think as much as we'd like to, it just doesn't make sense to pursue it. So, but I want, you know, people are curious, at least, I don't know, maybe fucking four or five people, but someone's curious about what's going on. And I'm sure we'll get some, haha, I knew you guys couldn't do it, from some people, but that's okay. So some background. So we originally had our sights set on doing a small modular stadium in Burlingame, just south of SFO. We met with the city. We talked to them for quite some time. Actually, the city actually proposed it to us before the first year of the Dragons. But at that point, we weren't really thinking USL. And so we got into a situation where we were put a proposal forward at Murray Field, which is just south of SFO. Topgolf was going in right next to it, which seemed like good timing, but really wasn't good timing because they had to go through their environmental impact review. They're going to pay the city a lot of money. The city's going to make a lot of money off of that. And so when we came in, it felt like a complimentary project, which should go next door to it. We felt like providing a stadium, basically donating a stadium to the city, would be useful. We weren't really asking for much. We were still going to pay rent on the stadium. Basically, we were just going to spend money to build a stadium, and we'd really have no rights to it other than we'd be able to rent it for the games we played. But we figured, you know, the kids and the soccer clubs and everything would enjoy playing there, and, you know, the city could use it for other things. But ultimately, the two issues that we came up with that one were the environmental impact review, which was going to drag on for, they assumed, 6 to 12 months. And until that was done, we couldn't get a definitive answer if we could play there, which wasn't going to work with our timeline with USL, because obviously we can't agree to it. We can't pay our franchise agreement, pay our franchise fee for something that we don't know if we'll ever be able to actually happen. And then, but we still were going to push forward, and we felt like, well, if we could just minimize our risk, we had I think it was about $600,000 we were going to have to pay to the city before knowing if we could play in the stadium, or before knowing if we could even build the stadium, because we had to pay $600,000 because they had their own timeline. They were going to redo the field, which they are redoing the field, and re-turf it. And if we wanted to incorporate a stadium into that area, they had to make some modifications to the plan that had already been approved. And in order to have their field ready in time for the local soccer clubs, I don't remember the exact timeline, our part of the project had to be done now. So we were, even then, we were thought, okay, well, you know, let's minimize our risk here. I mean, if we're gonna have to pay $600,000 and it may be something, and we won't get it back if they later, the environmental impact review says, hey, this isn't gonna work out. But we really want this to happen. So we, hold on, we having technical difficulties?
No.
Oh, so we really want this to happen. So we were having no technical difficulties. So Dennis decided to try and create some by messing with the cables. Anyways, we really wanted it to happen. And, so we kept meeting with them, and Jordan, was working really hard, went out and, you know, met with, local hotels. The parking on site was only about 250 spaces or 200 spaces for the field. Topgolf was going to have another 900 spaces, but that was all for them. And our, you know, our peak use when we used the field was probably going to be Friday nights when Topgolf was at peak capacity. So we couldn't use any of their parking. So the other big issue we had was parking. We figured, okay, we got a couple hundred spots there. Jordan went out and did deals with some of the neighboring hotels. So we figured, okay, well, we got 200 spots there. I think he got us up to 1,250 spots, which should have been plenty for a 5,200 seat stadium, which we hoped to be able to expand to 6,800, but in the beginning it was going to be 5,200. And there was questions if we would ever actually be allowed to expand it, but we figured, okay, well, you know, 5,200 will work. But ultimately, the city, I think we put them in a tough spot, and they put us in a tough spot. They had so much invested in this Topgolf thing. They didn't want to do anything to jeopardize that. So that what they didn't want to have happen is they didn't want to, you know, kind of approve us, have us get started, and then during Topgolf's environmental review, have something come up that said, hey, this would have been no problem, except now you've got that soccer stadium going in next door. That's created an issue for Topgolf, because that was going to cost the city a ton of money. So that was one thing that we were kind of all, you know, both parties were trying to balance. But ultimately they said, hey, you know, you can't take the hotel parking. Like, even though the hotels only use a third to half of their allotted parking, they have to have a certain amount of spaces based on the code. And even though that might change in the future, right now, even though they're not going to use those spaces, they can't do a deal with you to allow you to use them. So if they have 800 spaces and they're supposed to have 800 spaces, even if they're only using 300 of them at their max peak of parking and they have 500 spaces left, and you said, hey, we're going to do a deal with them where we're going to agree to rent 250 spaces 20 times a year, you can't do that because they're not allowed to not have 800 spaces available in case they need it. We said, okay. So then Jordan found like an office complex about 3/4 mile away. And he said, okay, well, I guess we'll have a couple hundred spots for VIPs or, you know, whoever, not VIPs, but, you know, premium parking pass holders. And then the rest of the people will be 3/4 miles away. We'll do shuttles. And then we got the lot taken away from us at the site. And they said, you know, for the site, let's just have, not taken away from us, but they just, I mean, the city was great and they were working really hard to make this happen. But they just said, hey, you know, realistically, why don't you have your staff park in that lot? But we'd rather not have any attendees park in that lot. So we thought, okay, well, fans won't be able to park in the lot, and they also won't be able to park in any of the hotels. The closest place anyone will be able to park is 3/4 mile away. So at that point, we walked out of the meeting and said, Jordan, we can't do this. Like, you know, as much as we want to make this happen, we got to be logical. Now, in reality, fans, people could have parked other places, but we would never have gotten approved without having enough parking that was definite. So it was just kind of one of those weird scenarios. So we actually left the meeting and we said, okay, so we're not going to pursue Burlingame. Now, the problem was, I think it was about a week before that, we had done the interview with the Chronicle. And so that was scheduled to run. And so we thought, well, okay, we'll still find somewhere. And in the interview, we said, you know, we're looking at multiple spots and this is one of them. So, you know, let's run with it, because we were very confident the project was still going to happen in some capacity. And we got the article came out, and it said, I think we even, you know, we said, hey, it may be one of the spots, but it basically said, hey, this is where they're going to play. So then it was a really surreal kind of thing, because we got a whole bunch of shit from people for being a San Francisco team that was going to play in Burlingame. But the reality was, we already knew we weren't going to play in Burlingame, but we didn't know where we were going to play. So we had identified a couple sites in San Francisco, but we definitely weren't far enough along to mention them. But we also didn't feel like saying we're not going to play in Burlingame, because then the logical question is be like, well, where are you going to play? And we had no fucking idea. So we just kind of left it as is. And then we reached out to the Giants, the San Francisco Giants. And we thought, you know, we went out to Cincinnati and we went to the U.S. Open Cup, where the Cincinnati played the Red Bulls. 33,000 people there, and we were just blown away. We're blown away by the potential of playing in that league and what they'd accomplished over there. And, you know, we spent a couple hours with the front office staff, and they were super helpful. And we really felt really good coming out of that. And we went to the game, all the bars and restaurants, you know, within half mile, a mile of the place, everyone's wearing blue and orange. We're like, holy shit, this is really impressive. You know, I've been to Sacramento and that was impressive, but this was like a whole nother level of impressive. I'd been to Portland for Timbers game, and it felt almost like that, where the community is like that into it. So we got an introduction to the Giants, and we met with them, and they said, well, you're hoping to play like a couple games? We're like, no, we're hoping to play all our games at AT&T Park. You know, like we want to be like Cincinnati. We want to go big. We want to play in the AT&T, when they've held soccer games there, it's been a great layout. We figure the Giants were a first-class organization. They have a division that runs events, Giants Enterprises, and And we were like, we really think like this is something good if we could pull this off. And we actually had some pretty exciting investors that were like, if you can play at AT&T, we're in. Like that's, you know, they prefer, let's do the big, go big or go home type scenario. And we thought, okay, well, I think we can pull this off. The expectations were realistic. We talked to the Giants. They said, you know, I think we start around 5,000 fans, and we think you know, we all felt that over this building slowly, we could eventually be a 15,000 fan experience, which would be great at AT&T. People, it's a first class facility. We didn't have to, all of a sudden we're like, hey, we don't need to build a stadium. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of things they already know how to do. They're a great group of people, and it seemed great. They said, now the big challenge we have is obviously the USL season runs concurrently with our baseball season, which is a challenge. And then within our open dates, you know, we have a lot of concerts and private events that we do there. So we don't know that we can get all of your games in there. So we thought, okay. Oh, they were super helpful. They said, but we got some other ideas, and you know, hey, we're gonna go to the drawing board, and if we can make this happen, you know, we'll do our best. So we said, okay. And I remember we kind of came out of there thinking like, if we could find a place to play 5 or 6 games, we could probably play the rest of them at AT&T. So they were busy with what's it called, baseball. so we reached out to the league. We told them, hey, this is what we're thinking, and we're pretty excited about this. And they I said, okay, you know, I mean, everyone seemed to think, man, if you could play at AT&T, that positions the team properly. You know, there's a challenge of being a second division team in a major league town. And we thought, like, the advantages of playing at AT&T, we could really get around that. And San Francisco Football Club in that stadium with the Giants helping, we thought was gonna be great. So ultimately, we found out, you know, a couple weeks ago that they tried their hardest. They did everything they could, but really they weren't going to be able to. They said, you know, we can't fit more than a couple of games into our schedule with baseball and needing these dates for concerts and private events. We've got a lot of people that have been having events with us. A lot of companies have had events with us for a long time. A lot of relationships with concerts. We can't basically block off these dates for you, which is understandable. They make a lot of money from these concerts and these events. And, you know, we were kind of the second division, you know, soccer team trying to start up. So we were, you know, hey, we appreciate all the time and effort you guys put in. They treated us just like we were, you know, a major league partner, you know, we appreciate all their effort. You know, there was the idea that maybe like a Pier 32, which was where the Warriors were thinking of building an arena originally, maybe there was an opportunity to build something temporary. We could build like a 5,000 seat pop-up stadium on the water, which would have been cool. And, you know, it would have been visually interesting to be playing on a pier right under the Bay Bridge, San Francisco. But, you know, we thought it limited us a little bit with our pull. And also, it was a 5,000 seat stadium. So we would have been capped, right? We have to invest $5 million up front. And like, there'd be no guarantee how long we could play on the pier. Could be one season, could be 5 seasons, could be 4 games. And then they decide, hey, this isn't safe, or, you know, something. And there were some uncertainties about how much it would cost to get the pier in a position where it could hold a field and all that. And so we, it would have been investing in knowing. So we would have to pay to learn. We would have to pay for environmental reviews or, you know, environmental assessments and all these different things. And ultimately we thought, for a $5 million, when the franchise fee is $5 million, we can't do it. Like, it's too risky. So ultimately we decided, okay, well, where else could we play? You know, where else could, there's some colleges, but, you know, with the requirements in the league of how many seats you have, and also with our own requirement that the only way we're doing this is if we can provide a full, exciting, fun soccer atmosphere. You know, stadiums where we can't serve alcohol, that's not going to work, right? Or stadiums that are too isolated aren't going to work. And so really around here, without there being a whole ton of open land, Jordan met with a couple other people that had some open land, and the costs were just going to be, in the Bay Area, it's crazy to buy land and build a stadium. It's just too much for us. So ultimately we decided, you know, we're out of options. We could literally spend forever, because we want it to happen so bad, trying to make it happen, but we just had to pull the plug. So we let the league know, you know, we're withdrawing our application. Now the Dragons is a PDL team. So the Dragons, we have a great front office. We had great players. We had great fans, but it's an amateur team in the fourth division that plays a, you know, an 8-game home schedule. Like, we can't, it's not a business. It's not something that we can really grow. And so our, you know, the incentive for the staff to grow was to grow into a bigger role in the USL. So we decided during the process of applying for the USL that if we got the USL team, we would keep the Dragons, because it'd be a great developmental team for our own team. But if we didn't, you know, we were going to lose the front office staff. And, you know, as much as I'd like to, it just doesn't have enough upside. It would be an expensive hobby. You know, the front office staff are the ones that went out and got the sponsorships and made the dollars work. You know, to lose them and start over again, you know, in a PDL team like that, you probably end up losing, I don't know, $100,000, a couple hundred grand a year. You know, we just felt like it doesn't seem to be enough passion for it in the city. The city doesn't, we have some great fans, but it wasn't like the city of Burlingame was like, this is awesome. Like, this is something that the whole city can get behind. You know, it's kind of like, hey, this is a fun thing for the people that want to come see this game. But it didn't turn into kind of like the civic thing that we hoped it would be. And also, without any more upside, we're going to lose the staff. So we said, okay. So we let the Earthquakes know that, you know, we're going to also not going to apply for 2018 for the Dragons, which is disappointing. It was 3 years. You know, we had big dreams in the beginning. But ultimately, as hard as we tried, as much as we wanted it to happen, we couldn't make it happen. So we had to kind of pull the plug. So unfortunately, I guess I'm announcing in a super long-winded way, and something that maybe no one will ever listen to, that our SFFC dream is over, and the Dragons are gonna cease playing as well. So
where does that leave you with soccer?
Well, I mean, it's tough because really believe in soccer, passionate about soccer. You know, out of the blue, I mean, I don't know. I always read this book, Zen and the Art of Happiness, which basically says whatever happens is the best thing that could possibly happen. Out of the blue, a couple weeks ago, did get a unexpected inbound inquiry and had a chance to make a small investment in a Premier League team, which I don't think we've announced yet, but that was fun. You know, it's fun as far as it's the best league in the world, and it's a small investment where you don't really have any responsibility, but you feel some connection. You know, it's almost like betting on the team. It makes it more fun to watch, which is fun in that way, but it doesn't, you know, yeah, I can wear a hat, but it doesn't like, you know, doesn't get your juices flowing like building something. But, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't rule out anything. I mean, soccer in the U.S. is tough. Like, it's kind of fucked up and exciting at the same time, right? Like, you know, I spent a long time. I met with 3 MLS teams over the past couple of years. You know, one team I was planning to be, you know, a pretty big part of their ownership group. And ultimately, MLS eventually just couldn't pull the trigger because it just got to be so expensive, right? Like, it's $150 million for a franchise. Like, and then you have to build a stadium. So these expansion franchises, it's a $450 million project. I think LAFC is like a $650 million project. And so a lot of it's just based on, so part of that is like, so you invest a ton of money and you have a small part. And second part is it's all based on the potential of the future, right? So there's things that I can't reconcile in my head. Like, in some markets, it's huge, right? You go to Portland, you go to Atlanta, you know, you go to some of these cities in Seattle, and it's like, in Orlando, it's like, oh, they're soccer mad within that community. But the challenge for MLS is the cities that don't have a team seem like they could kind of care less, right? So it's not, hasn't gotten to that point yet. So I think it will potentially, but it's a big risk. You know, same with, you know, even the second division, $5 million is a lot, right? And then so in the rest of the world, you basically start small and you work your way up into a bigger league. And when you get into a bigger league, there's financial benefits, right? Like, I think if you're in the fourth division in England, you still get $800,000 in TV money or something like that. You know, don't quote me if I'm a little bit off, right? And then everyone invests, because if they can get to the Premier League, they're going to get this huge financial windfall if they can stay there. And every step you get up becomes more lucrative to you. You have to invest more money to keep going, but there's a reward for getting there. Well, in the U.S., the reward for getting into a higher division is you can pay more and you can build a more expensive stadium, right? Like Cincinnati, I understand, I guess, why they want to go to MLS, but I also don't understand, why don't they just stay in the USL, right? Like, why go spend $150 million on a franchise fee and why go build a $250 million stadium? You already have a good thing going. You know, for me, it's like, why doesn't the way that soccer would become, to me, the biggest is promotion relegation. Like, you have to, if you're going to limit the number of teams, limit the number of cities, like, you know, base who gets a team on who has the most money to build a stadium, I think you're eliminating a lot of possibilities. If you have promotion relegation, instantly people who want to invest are going to invest. Obviously, it's got a bunch of challenges and it'd be hard, but the reason it has challenges and it's hard is because of the money that people have already invested in MLS and they don't want to give up that top spot. You know, if I was USL, I would just say, forget about MLS, fuck MLS. I'll just, we'll build divisions 1 through 3 and we'll have promotion and relegation within those divisions. And maybe if if you go from the second division into the first division, you have to, in lieu of getting, because the league has to offer something eventually, right? If there's a TV deal or something, maybe in lieu of getting a payment, if it's your first time up, they don't pay you anything because that's how you quote unquote pay your entry fee or something. I don't know what the ideas are. And it's probably really hard and people a lot smarter than me can't figure it out. But I think it's just kind of a mess. Like, it's as much as you want it to happen, there's so many restrictions and things already in place that it's hard to figure out. You know, like the Dragons, right? If I said, well, I want to just keep investing in the Dragons. I can't. What would I do? They would go to, I would have to pay $5 million to go into the next league. And then what? Like, and then I invest in the team. But like, you know, it'd be better off if I could just invest $5 million in the team and create a better product and generate more fans and get along. And then the value of that would make that league more valuable. I don't know. It's all very confusing. The guys at USL are great. I mean, they have probably obviously spent a lot more time working out. And I really enjoyed the time we spent with them. Nothing negative to say about them. It's just, you know, everyone's kind of a, soccer's weird here. Everyone's just trying to claim it and there's competing entities and then there's the Soccer Federation. And I still couldn't figure out, even after going through a lot of diligence with a couple MLS teams, like what the role is with USSF and MLS. And even on the TV deal, like you could never get a straight answer on like, well, how much of the TV money, how much of the $90 million goes to whatever it is, some soccer US marketing, whatever it's called, because of for the national team. Like, how much do the actual teams split versus how much does the national team get? And who negotiates these things? And does anyone, you know, it's like the whole thing. And I followed on Twitter and people are trying to figure it out all the time. Like, is it a federation? Is it a private business? Like, I have no idea. So ultimately, I hope it gets figured out. I hope everyone, hope all the MLS teams, hope all the USL teams have great success. Still going to be watching. But I think it's just too confusing to figure out any way to invest. I mean, first knee-jerk reaction was like, oh, well, you know, like you read about Detroit City. It's like, oh, they're looking for investors. Well, fuck, let's invest in Detroit City. And then you realize, well, you wouldn't be investing in Detroit City. You'd be investing in a league. And in a league where Detroit City would probably bring more value to that league than the league would provide Detroit City. So it's like, what the, so it's, you know, wouldn't, you can't invest in a team, you just got to invest in a league. And that's a hard thing to rationalize. It does make sense. I mean, we would have gladly done it with USL if we could have played at AT&T Park, because I think to invest that much money, you need to know there's a bunch of upside. So that's pretty much it on the rambling explanation. So, sorry, I just got a weird thing on the phone. Anyways, so I don't know if anyone will listen to this podcast. I don't even know where they're going to post this podcast. But if anyone has any questions, they can hit me up on Twitter at Swinmurn, and I'll do my best to answer them. And yeah, thanks for following the story of the team. Sorry we couldn't pull it off, but we'll see what happens in the future.
Thank you for listening. And if you want to follow us, we have a few options here. If you want to follow us on Instagram, it's at The Startup Addict. Twitter is startup_addict. And if you want to follow us on YouTube, just search for The Startup Addict, and we're somewhere in that list until we get enough subscribers and we can actually have our own URL. And if you're an iTunes person, please follow us in iTunes, The Startup Addict. Thank you very much. See you next week.